Let me turn one right, and Phil's visit on Friday morning, the 15th of May, 1970. Mr. Howarth, the blacksmith, is here. And his Phil's visit, the Friday morning, the 15th of May, 1970, channel one right, and a new reel. Phil couldn't come yesterday morning when the vet was here. Patsy came over to show him her brand new car. And this is the beginning of the visit on channel one right on Friday morning, the 15th of May, 1970. Now, this is a beautiful little tape. He's impish. Faye just adored one little section of it. Only it has a whistle in it. It has a whistle all the way through. That's my fault in not pushing in the connections.
When has your mother been down?
Well, she was down a little after Christmas, but she wasn't here too long. She's back up in Tennessee now.
Well, I have seen her in several times that she's been down here.
Well, you know, it was so darn cold when she was here. She didn't get out too much.
There was a boy that comes down here from Columbus, Ohio, every year and stays with some people up there, stays with Laura. And weather, because he says he just can't stand that cold weather.
Yeah.
And he said this time, said he might as well stayed at home, said it was so cold down here.
You know, Phil, I hit it down here, that winter of 58. And it was, you remember what that was. But you know, I never been down here before in the winter, and it seemed pleasant to me.
Yeah?
It was so warm to us.
Well, I remember one winter, I don't remember when it was, but we just had a 50-gallon drum for fuel for heat, you know, and we filled that thing up one time.
Yes.
And that was all the winter we had, that winter.
That's the way it ought to be.
But last winter,
you know,
I don't know how much Mabel, my goodness, if she keeps that there big old heater we got going in there enough to heat everything around there. And I expect we used 300-400 gallons or less. But the granddaughter, I was bought a tank out there that holds 370 gallons.
Ooh.
And they brought it out there and put it in and put all the kerosene the man had in his tank at 130 some odd gallon. They put that in there. And I filled it up one time after then. But there's been, that winter was half over when he done that, you know. He come out there and wanted to put it in, and I just filled up the other one, held 100 gallons. And I told him, I said, you just wait till I use this up and then put it in. So he did, but the winter was half over, and I know we used somewhere about 300 gallons.
Well, then, now that little old stove there didn't cost anything, and you know, it's not worth anything. It just consumes it.
Well,
and I've got that little dual therm over there built for a trailer, and it was one of the fine models. They were plentiful in the 50s. Now that's how far back those little dual therms go.
Uh-huh.
Of course, they've been made since then. And it heats up, and it don't burn any gas at all. And furthermore, you can turn it down to just a little flicker.
This is a gas heater.
Mm-hmm. Kerosene.
Well, you know, I was cutting wood, and oh, we had a wood heater over there when we first moved up there.
Oh, you did?
Uh-huh. And cut wood, and that old fellow over there next to old man Brumley, you know him.
Yeah.
He got sick, and I had to cut wood for him, too, while he was sick. Finally, I went up to Micanopy and got me a wood outfit from old Giraffe and brought it out there, and I cut up enough wood to last about that winter. And I cut up enough old man Brumley to last that winter and the next winter, and he never did cut no more wood. And Orene's house, she was down here one time, and her house got burnt up. And it burnt up everything the girl had. And them there, I guess you heard of them Wade's there, N.G. Wade, mighty big people. They owned a lot of stock in the Coastline Railroad and the Brunswick Timber Company bought, bargained to buy or something other, 14,000 acres of timber that was this side of Brunswick from the public road back to the river. And I went down there and stayed one day, and the old man decided he didn't want to sell it. They were very wealthy, and his son used to come to see us a good bit down here. If he ever come down in this country around, and he had a lot of business everywhere, he'd come by the house and stay an hour or two with us. And he most always bring me a fifth of Canadian Club if I was ever sick, and Mabel tell him that I was sick and wasn't feeling very good, oh, say, oh, he needs a fifth of Canadian Club. And he generally bring me a fifth of the Canadian Club, and Raff would generally drink it up, and his friend, and Owen. But he was a mighty good fellow. I thought lots of him.
Now, where was he, up in Brunswick?
No, he lived in Jacksonville. And his sister's there now. I know them old souls must be old. They still operate the business and all like that.
You know, that's one of the things that we used to have, we could depend on, you see. If we could take a little toddy, and it was good for just about anything. And you see, now they don't encourage that, Phil.
Jay Hurlong, I'd laugh at him one day. It was in 58, he bought him a new Cadillac automobile. And it was Easter, and told me, he said, "Patsy, come on, I want you to drive this new car." And I drove it up there to Johnny's place when he run that place up there. I'd never taken a drink in there in my life. And I've been around jail lots of times, but I never had drink with him. I never had taken a drink with him or nothing. I stopped there and went in there and told Johnny I wanted to drink, but I didn't want it that little glass. I wanted a bigger glass. I said, "I don't want no bigger drink than that, but I said, I don't want that little old glass." So he set the bottle and the glass out there, and And I told Jay, I said, won't Jay and have a drink? He said, uh-uh. So if you started drinking, I done quit. I tried to get him, no, sir. Says, when did you start drinking? I said, right now. And when I was in Colorado, the town where Mabel's nephew lives, and every night Irene's got to have that there rum and coke. She got to have that little drink to go to bed. And I rang at about 2 o'clock when we got back from the nephew's house, and she was fixing a toddy, you know. I said, Irene, I said, fix me one too. So she pulled the rum in the glass and went out there to look in the icebox to get the Coca-Cola put in it, and I decided I'd put the rum in there while she was gone. Didn't know she done already put it in there. So I put some more in there and come back, and I told her, I said, Irene, I said, shit, mighty strong stuff. She said, yes, it is. I said, I didn't know I was putting that much rum in that. She says, you put it in that too? I said, yes. So I pulled half of mine in her glass and finished filling mine up with Coca-Cola. So them was the two drinks that I've had. And I never did have another one. And I told her that we was in Olympia, and we was looking at that salmon run that they had in the back of that place there where salmon went up and caught them and got the eggs and cared of the hatcheries and all. And I told her, I said, oh, get me a bottle of that beer before I leave and drink it. So day or two after that, she brought me one. And I taken a swallow of that, and oh my goodness, that was the bitterest stuff I ever tried to drink. And they had a beautiful bulldog, white bulldog. And he generally eat other people up. That he was a bad dog, but he liked me. And I pulled some of that beer in his plate, and he drank it. So that dog drank most of the beer. I never thought a dog would drink beer, but he did.
How do you feel afterwards?
I rang all right. And we was in Tacoma, and being the dog went in place and got some milkshake.
You and the dog?
He loved milkshakes. That dog loved me. Me and dog went in there and got the milkshake.
Well, how does Mabel have so many remedies? Well, she just knows remedies for everything.
Oh, yeah. And I don't know, people call her, old-time calling her and telling them what was the matter with you, and she'd tell them something to do. I don't know.
Well, she's had a lot of sick folks she's took care of, and of course, anyone learns like that. But she just has them right there. They come right to her, don't they?
Yeah, she'll do something for you. Now, I don't know whether it's good or bad, but it generally works on me. I don't know whether it works on human or not.
You got a doctor you found?
Yeah.
Haven't got much choice, have you?
No.
Well, he practically got a trained nurse or a doctor right there in the family,
I was sitting out there on the carport the other day, sitting down there, and I'd been reading some little old pamphlet I picked up there. I'd been reading it, and I couldn't tell you what it was about after I read it, because I didn't understand none of it. I didn't know what none of it was. I hate to admit that I got that little sense, but I couldn't understand what it was all about. But I was thinking about it, and a pain hit me back under my left shoulder back there, and it hit me, and I tell you, I just never had such a pain in my life. And I got up and started in the house, and I didn't know where I was going to make it or not. Nothing like that had ever happened to me. And I went in there, and I told her, I said, Mabel, I said, got a pain in there. It kind of take your breath. You couldn't talk. And she brought me a pill. She says, chew this up. I'd shoot it up, and by that time she had something else, and I taken that. What it was, I don't know. But in just a few minutes, it eased off, and never had bothered me anymore. And what it was, I don't know, but I have never had such a pain as that before.
Yeah.
You know, there's several heart attacks that I've had, and my chest has never hurt. I've never had no pain in my chest and all like people do, you know, with a bad heart. It's my left arm. It's my left arm. And that's the only, it's pain. Now, I tell you, it's pretty severe pain, all right.
Yeah.
But as far as my chest and all ever hurt me, it never has.
Yeah.
It's my arm, and you know, the first attack I had, this arm was paralyzed for about 3 weeks. Yeah, I couldn't move it. It was, and you know, I got by with it, and very few people knowed it.
Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah. Well, you know more about doctoring the animals than you do the people.
Yes, used to do a whole lot of that, See, down on the farm, we had sometimes 75, 80 mules, horses down there. And Mr. Rullin was a great hand to doctor the mules and the horses. He won sick and all like that. And they never fed them like I fed them. I give them all they wanted to eat. Kept it in the trough all the time, and I hardly ever had a sick mule or horse.
Yeah.
But you had to know yourself. You didn't call the vet all the time, did you?
Oh, no. In fact, there wasn't one. There wasn't one. And the first thing I ever knew was Dr. Sutton.
Yeah.
And he told me one day, he said, you know, Phil says, there's more horses die from people drenching them than they do from the disease. Jill give me a bottle or something or other, go drench a mule, and I'd throw it over the fence and go on down to old John Sutter getting his wine keg or something like that. And the mule would get all right, you know, and I didn't give nothing. And I got to doing that. I just throw the stuff away and go ahead and stay away from him so I wouldn't have to lie, you know. Did you give the mule the medicine? I'd have to say yes, you know. I'd stay away from him. And I think everybody's good luck. I think it was.
Well, now that was put right. He had paid attention to a lot of that treatment himself, then, hadn't he, that Doc Sutton?
Yeah. Well, he was a mighty good veterinary. He was a good veterinary. And he says that most of the time you start to drench in a mule or horse that you get this stuff in his lungs.
Yeah.
And says it'll do him more harm than he is good. Says he'll be better off to just let his stomach ache till he gets well.
I feel sort of useless.
We had a mule, and it was a big, pretty mule, and he was down, and I declare, I have never seen a mule that was swollen like that mule was. And old John Sutton, old ham-legged nigger that looked after the mules, and come took out my horse when I come home, way yonder sometime in the night. And you never have to call him. He know when you come in, live right back to the lot. And he'd know when I drove in the barnyard, and he'd be out there and take out my horse. I told old John, I said, John, I said, I believe if the air was out of this here mule, I said, I'd believe he'd be all right. So I took my knife and I stuck a hole in the mule, but it closed up. And I told him, I said, give me that pipe stem, old reed pipe stem in this old cob pipe. I said, you can get you another. He gave it to me, and I stuck that reed in there where the hole was still, man, you know, and took a match and put to that thing, and all that was the prettiest, bluest flame you ever seen. It burnt. Old mule lay down there, and after a while he come in kicking and all like that. It wasn't long before he was up. I told Doc Sutton what I'd done. He said, my God, Phil, said he's the one his mule had to die. I said, well, he didn't. He got well, I reckon. I said, he was all right. He said, well, don't you ever do that again, him.
Well, how did you happen to strike a match to that?
I just set the fire. The air was coming out, you know, and it's gas. And I put a match to it, the prettiest, bluest flame you ever seen, just burning there, you know.
He was just full of gas.
Yeah, just full of gas. And I thought, let that gas out of him, he'd be all right.
And it worked that time.
It worked, but he told me, he said, don't you do that no more. Says it's just a wonder that mule ever got up. Said wonder he had to kill it.
You just put a hole in his side?
Yeah. Just stuck a hole back in his flank out there, back that flabby part of his leg. I just stuck a hole in there. But a little air come out, but it wouldn't. I'd take that old nigger's pipe stem, and I stuck it in there, and boy, you never seen the air.
Oh, his pipe stem.
Hold it open.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yes, old reed, just an old reed pipe stem and old cob pipe. And I told him, I said, you can get another. I imagine he had half a dozen at the house anyway. But he gave it to me, and I stuck it in there and then set the fire. And
you had his pipe, so you just lit his pipe?
He could lit his pipe all right.
What in the world? You just thought he was falling, you just let the gas out. It made sense.
Now, that's what I thought, you know. He was small enough. Oh, he just looked like he was bust. And there was nobody there but me and old John, you know. And I told John, I said, John, I said, this mule is full of gas. And I said, I think we let it out.
You did?
And when I got my knife out, John said, Mr. Fell said, you going to stick a hole in that mule? I said, yeah. I stuck it in there and took his pipe stem and put it in there. And that stuff come out of there and it put as blue as blaze you ever seen. You could have cooked a meal.
I can just
Lord, Lord.
Well, now, how come you connected with that mule?
That's some people that helped raise me. I left home when I
Oh, that's the Rutlands?
Yeah.
That's one of them mules?
Yeah.
And that Sutton, Gully
fella, he was an old ham-legged nigger, been with him a long time, and he just looked after the barn and the mules and the whole feed and done whatever you wanted him to do.
Somebody had to be around all the time.
There was an old woman used to come to see Miss Maggie, and I didn't like her. She was an old woman. I didn't like her a bit. She was always why ain't you out there plying or something like that? Why ain't you out there chopping cotton or hoeing cotton or something like that? And she drove an old gray mule, poor old gray mule. And most of the time when she'd come over there, I'd have to take that old mule out, put him in the barn. And she told me, she said, Phil said, you feed my mule good. I told you, I'd feed him good. I went in the crib and there's a barrel of dry peas in there, old speck of field peas, and I got about a gallon of them old field peas, and I went out there and poured them in the trough. And that mule had swelled up some too. And, but you know it didn't kill him. It didn't kill him. And I went out there and got old mule and up, and she said, you know, said Phil, said, you must have given my mule too much. Said, he looked like he's kind of swelled up or something. No, I said, he'd be all right. I said, when you get in the buggy, I said, you take that limb, and I said, you just whop him up and down the side, and I said, you get him limbered up, and I said, he'd be all right. After she left, I told Miss Maggie what I'd done. She said, well, Phil said, that might kill that old mule. I said, I hope the hell it do.
Well, now, she had that old mule. Did they work that old bony mule?
Yeah, they worked him.
But just didn't feed him much.
No, didn't feed him. That was the thing about it. They just didn't feed him. And the old mule starved to death and eat them dry peas, boy, you know. And if I'd have give him only that, why, that mule wouldn't never got out of that barn. I'd had to put a hole in him to let the air out of him.
You just kept something in the trough when you was feeding them?
When my own mules. Yes, I never let it get out. I kept feeding the trough all the time.
What is bran? Did you ever feed them bran?
Wheat bran, I fed that to
cows.
Cows.
What do you feed that to cows for?
It's pretty good to feed them milk cows. I reckon I don't know very much about feeding cows, nothing like that. But
we used to have bran around and fed it to cows, but I never knew why.
When one thing, you had a lot of wheat, and that was what you had left, and was your feed. Yeah.
I see. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But after so many years, they ground that bran up, you know, and it was all short.
Yes.
It wasn't no bran, it was wheat shorts. They made wheat shorts out of all of it.
Oh, I see. Just ground the whole wheat.
Yeah. Well, no, just, you know, you get flour,
yeah.
And I think you get seconds,
yeah,
and shorts. And bran out of wheat, and they taken the seconds and shorts and bran and ground it all up together and made shorts out of it. A little old town where I went to work for these people, they had a grocery store. Well, it was a farmer supply place. All them big farmers there, you couldn't give the niggas the money to go and get the groceries, but they get drunk and they wouldn't have nothing to eat the next month. And they just come to town every first Saturday. And a lot of those people that we furnished, and then the people come in Monday and give us a check for what the people got, and old man Henderson Powell had a few more than 100 plows used besides the farm by the plows in. And there was another fella, his name was Sykes, Joe Sykes, lived right next to him, and he had a little less than 100. Well, you know, them two customers alone was pretty good business.
Yeah, it sort of keep the store going.
And then after a while, he went to handling machinery, you know, and then that's what I done, put up these old rakes and mowing machines and things like that, and worked in the hardware department. I worked there, I reckon, about 2 years, and then he sold it out and went down to the farm, and I went down there and stayed 2 years, part of 2 years.
But you never done any work?
No. As far as out there digging in the ground, no.
I don't see how you got out of that, Phil. Sooner or later, you bound there.
You didn't know me.
Just one instant digging in the ground.
No, I wasn't. Oh, you know, Jill had a big old pair of mules hitched up to a 27 Lynchburg plow and told me to go over and start prying in a new ground over there. I told him, I said, now let me tell you one damn thing. I said, do you want me to leave? I said, is that what you want? I said, if you do, I'll sure do it right now.
So
I'm ready to go. Boy, his wife came out there and he got blessed out right quick.
Let me tell you, boys used to run off all the time. Used to, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what did they run off for? Something come up they didn't like and they just run off.
Well, that's what I left for.
They'd come back, but by the time they run off, they'd get sort of weaned off away from home. Get them a job, maybe.
Well, I left home, but I never went back to stay. I went to see my mother. And I take care of her, but I never went back home to live.
Well, did the folks then just figure that the boys, when they got big enough, they just run off?
Well, most of the people, when they got a pretty good size, they run them off.
They run them off?
Mm-hmm. I reckon I walked about 5 or 6 miles, and I got to this old church, and the wind had blown a big limb out of a oak there in the churchyard, and there was a pump there, one of these old hand pumps, and I stopped and got some water, and sat down on that limb, and I asked myself out loud, where in the hell are you going? And that's when that mail carrier come along, and I went on town with it. Not nothing but a pair of overalls on, and not a nickel, and I doubt if I had the underwear on. But now that's the way I left.
You know, I'll bet you a lot of fellas that you know or I know or did know had done the same thing if I didn't know about it.
No, I tell you, I had taken it just about as long as I could. I did exactly what I told my daddy it wouldn't work. Because now, me not 13 years old, I had stayed around fixing boilers and things like that till I knew that what he told me to do was not no good. But I had to do it because he said do it. Then the thing blowed out and scalded a nigga pretty bad. Then he started abusing me, you know, cussing me, all right then. And I didn't say a word. I just walked on up the hill, and I kept walking. And he said, my mother, she didn't live there. She lived in town, and I didn't go there. I didn't go where she lived. But he said, oh, well, says, he'll be back tomorrow. He'll be back.
Get hungry.
He'll get back when he gets hungry or something like that. But I imagine I'd had to been pretty hungry till he went back up because I just...
Well, he didn't need any money. Them days, you could just start working for somebody wherever you stopped.
Well,
food was no great item.
I walked in the store and I told Jill that I wanted a job, and He says, have you run away? I said, no, I wouldn't call it that. I said, I left home. And he said, well, I had on them things, clothes that I'd wake in. He says, have you got any clothes? I told him, no. And he told me, he said, well, you go over here, we got in the store, old shoe store, and said, you get you some clothes. I went over and got me some clothes and went to work.
Just be sure. Now that's the end of this beautiful little tape. On Friday morning, when the blacksmith, Mr. Howells, was coming, I picked up Phil. He couldn't come yesterday when the vet came. And he came in. We waited half an hour, I guess, for the vet, and he talked all the time. And he got into these, he just rolled these off. Just beautiful little stories. It's not the content, it's so impish. On 505 or 10, channel 1, right on this new reel, Phil Patterson, May the 15th, Friday, the 15th of May, 1970, Friday morning, 510, channel 1, right.